for Insight with Jack Sogler on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Sogler is being brought to you by the community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's broadcast. Without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Jack Sogler.
I've already pointed Jack.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Raise your finger higher. There you go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Insight on this absolutely gorgeous Wednesday night. And speaking of gorgeous, we welcome into studio the lovely Mr. Steve Stone.
I was hoping you started with Carly on that one.
And his very pretty daughter, Carly Griso, right?
Yep.
So how long have you been married?
A year. A week ago.
How cool. Things are going well.
Yeah. Going
still good. On your honeymoon to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, so, she certainly is.
Yes. So I tell you what, we like to have you guys come and visit at about this time of year, because this is a very active time for you, for sure, and then for people they're starting to get antsy about getting out in their
lawn and landscape work.
Yes. Yeah. So, but before we get into that, I think it's worth talking about Nature's Green. You're celebrating 30 years in the business.
It's hard to imagine. It's hard to, you know, it doesn't seem possible, but yes, this is our 30th year. We incorporated in 1994. So this is our 30th year.
So let's go back. And I think everybody knows that you're an Ohio State grad, correct?
I would hope so.
Yeah. So when you got out of college, did you start Nature's Green right out of college? Or
when I was at the university and I was working in the summer job, I was working over in Union City at Wasson Nursery for like four consecutive summers while I was in school. So that was my summer job. And then when I was at the university, I was fortunate enough to work for the university in their horticulture research greenhouses, and just basically helped the professors with their research and really kind of got paid to goof off and just basically help the professors, which was a lot of fun, interesting. So spent all my time at quote unquote work in the greenhouses, and again basically just helping them with all the research that gets done at the university. So it was a lot of fun, very interesting stuff.
So then you got your diploma and they finally kicked you out of there.
They certainly did. It was a lot of fun working at the university. If money was no object, I've told numerous people that I would have probably just got my PhD or my master's and my PhD and just stayed at the university, because I enjoyed academia at that time. I don't think I would have enjoyed it this time. But back in the day, it was just interesting to work with the professors and to get paid to teach at a college level and do research on a college level, you know, to me was a neat job, because it really didn't feel like a job. It was a lot of fun.
So then
came back home and accepted a full-time position with Wasson Nursery.
Okay.
And at the time, the owner was Dan Wasson, and him and I, he's retired. He just, actually, I just heard he retired this year. Dan and I had a very good relationship, and he has two boys, and they're running the company now. And so I worked for them for a little over 2 years, and I kind of had a sideline gig going on where I would help people with their lawns and landscapes in the evenings and weekends, and it just kind of grew from there, as far as I got so busy working on my own in the evenings and the weekends and Saturdays and Sundays that I thought possibly I could just do it on my own.
Yeah.
So that led me into talking to my brother. Dave at the time was dating Angie LaFever and now married. He helped me develop a business plan, and I had a, with his help, because he's a lot smarter than me, but I hope he's not listening.
He'll be the first one to tell you that too, right?
Oh, absolutely, no question. He helped me put together a really good business plan, very professionally put together, and again, I just can't say enough how fortunate I am that he's out at LaFever's, you know, typing that thing up and printing it off and reading it and doing all the revisions on it. And Cy was obviously there and picked it up and read it. And it's like, what's Steve up to? And Dave gave him the business plan. And he said, oh, that's interesting. He said, that's neat. I like that. He said, why don't you send him out to talk to me sometime? So it just kind of blossomed from there. Cy was a big advocate in helping me, you know, get my business going. And, you know, I just can't say enough good things about him.
And Cy was an advocate for improving Fort Recovery, you know. And he could see things that Fort Recovery needed, you know, and having a business in that area was something that we didn't really have at that time. And
yeah, I can't say enough good things about Fort Recovery, you know, to this day. But back then, Cy was there to help, and in anything I needed, you know, he was there. If I needed a loan, he always co-signed. It's amazing, if I walk into a bank back in the day, I didn't get a lot of cred from the managers. But if I walked in and Cy was with me, oh boy, did they roll out the red carpet.
That helps, doesn't it?
And I was fortunate enough that Charlie Hine was always a good friend and a helpful mentor, whatever you want to say. And Charlie knew what I was up to, and Charlie was out looking for ground. He said, you need ground. He said, you need a place to put this thing. So he's out. He's, hey, I found this. I found that. There's a place right here I think would be perfect. And Charlie was hugely helpful in launching this thing. And Jerry, Mark Adams and I were friends all through high school. And Jerry was always you know, one of the hardest working dudes I ever met when it came to running the store. Jerry was in my corner, and I'd always ask him questions, this and that. And so, you know, I just can't say enough about those guys and how much help they were to take a dumb, you know, 22-year-old, 23-year-old, A, to spend the time and to talk, and then B, you know, they were all there. You know, it was literally like Charlie and Cy were fighting over who were going to, you know, who was going to help me launch this thing. And it, you know, where else does that happen?
Yeah, that's fantastic. So then you carried the torch for the first 30 years and then your daughter Carly decided at some point to follow in Dad's footsteps.
I don't know if I want the torch, but I'll help carry it. I don't want the whole thing.
So you are also a graduate of Ohio State, correct?
Correct. I was not going to go there at first. I was originally going for business at Miami University, and I ended up like not paying my acceptance fee on time or something, so then I just had to go to Ohio State. That was my fallback.
Thanks. Hurts a little. Stings a little bit, but okay. Let's keep going.
Every time she put the check in the mail, Steve would pull it out.
Exactly. She wondered why I never got there.
Sent it 15 times.
So for some reason, I thought I was going to go for radiology and do the x-ray tech and all that. And I took my anatomy and physiology classes, and I did terrible. Yep. And I just didn't enjoy it. I studied really hard. So one day I decided I would take a horticulture class because they still had some, not the same program that he did, but some of the same stuff.
And you knew at least a little bit about it. So
I did.
So it might be an easy one to take.
Yeah, so I actually did really good in that class. I'm like, wow, it's fun to do something you're actually good at. And I always swore, I watered in the greenhouse for 10 years, and I swore I'd never come back. And then after I took those classes, I had to call my dad and say, what do you think about a business partner?
So,
a long road to get there.
So it was due to your success in those classes that you said, damn, I'm going to follow the old man.
Yep. I had to call him, and I was a little embarrassed to tell him.
Yeah, it hurts to tell Steve Stone he's right.
I know. It did.
Yeah. The women in my house rarely tell me that.
And that's probably how it should be.
FYI.
Except for horticulture, you probably are not right very often.
That's exactly correct.
Well, we'll come back and talk about more cases in which Steve Stone is right.
And or wrong.
I gotta say, that's a short show.
Right after this.
Hello, this is Zoe from Brick Street Tavern, and we have delicious home-cooked daily lunch specials at a great price Monday through Friday. And now we also offer a second cook's choice lunch special every day. We still offer our regular lunch favorites. We start off each week with Mystery Monday, and our special will be something different each week. On Tuesday, it's our meatloaf dinner. Wednesday, it will be our famous three-piece chicken dinner. Thursday, you can get a tenderloin with fries and applesauce. And on Friday, we have our big half-pound cheeseburger with fries and slaw. And now we also offer a second lunch special every day. Check our Facebook page daily to see what our two lunch specials will be. Fast, delicious, home-cooked meals. Lunchtime, Monday through Friday, here at Brick Street Tavern in downtown Fort Recovery.
At Cooper Farms, family first isn't just a saying. It's our culture.
I like that the company has a value system that I can subscribe to. Things that are important to the organization are also things that are important to me. We have very caring and competent leaders that value family.
Join the family. Apply online at CooperFarms.com. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
Hello, I'm Kenny Canute from K&L Tractor Sales in Fort Recovery, Ohio. If you're serious about your lawn, you should get a lawn or garden tractor sold by someone who is dedicated to knowing their products. That's why more and more people are realizing the value in purchasing lawn and garden tractors from a local independent simplicity dealer like K&L Tractor. We offer test drives, financing plans, service technicians, setup and delivery, and of course, the best tractors and zero-turn mowers made. Simplicity, the way to a beautiful lawn.
I'm Kenzie Yarkey.
I'm Brittany Tevy.
And I'm Callie Wendell. And we're the Indians girls softball team. And we're challenging the baseball team again this year to see which team can collect the most donations for our local food pantry on Monday, April 1st, when we place the lineup.
I'm Sage Wendell.
I'm Riggs Toby.
And I'm Troy Homan. And we're the Indians baseball team. We accept your challenge because we know we can collect a lot more food pantry donations than these girls can.
Last year, we collected a lot more than the boys did, and we got to pie our coaches in the face, and we're going to do it again this year.
We'll be playing Sydney Lehman that day, and we're going to win the competition and pie our coaches in the face this year.
Whichever teams win, the fans who come to the games can win too. For every item you donate, you'll get a ticket or our drawing to win Fort Recovery Merchant gift certificates to be given away that day.
Some of the suggested donations are non-perishable food or household items, such as cleaning supplies or Ziploc bags, and personal care items like shampoo, deodorant, toiletries, etc.
Make sure you bring your donations to the Little Fever Athletic Complex to cheer us on as we play Salina.
And we play Sydney Lehman, and you can help us collect a lot of items for our local food pantry.
Come out and help our baseball and softball teams collect donations for our local food pantry on Monday, April 1st.
We'll see you there.
We're back. Insight. Talking to Steve Stone and Carly Greaseup from Nature's Green, celebrating their 30 years in business. And so we talked about the past 30 years. So what's been the biggest change when you look back to when you started to today? What's been the biggest change?
For us, the biggest change has probably been from the construction side. We do a lot more construction than we did at the beginning. At the beginning, it was a lot of certainly plants and mulch, and that was in trees and seeding and stuff like that. I think probably back, I don't know, it's probably been 15, 18 years ago, we started doing more, you know, big patios out. And I think the people kind of demanded that, you know, if you wanted to add this big outdoor entertaining area, you didn't necessarily call somebody like a Dave Cowell because you're not necessarily building a structure. And then we started doing, we started doing pergolas. I have a great friend, John Burnett, that lives just south of town. He is an unbelievable craftsman. I mean, just a super talented, old school woodworking craftsman. The dude can build anything and make it look cool. Him and I became really good friends, and he started doing pergolas for us. So we started doing rough sawn cedar pergolas and then brick paver patios, and that bled into waterfalls and water features and ponds, and then of course all the landscaping that goes along with that, and then fire rings, putting in wood burning fire rings, and then we started building fireplaces, outdoor fireplaces. So the construction end of it has blossomed and bloomed into something I would have never imagined 30 years ago. The stuff we're building now, I would have never imagined, and that comes with really, really good people, like John that builds for us. We have Eric Vian that has been with us for 20 years. Is that 19 years? It's been a long time. The dude is incredibly talented, and I give credit where credit's due. He's part of what we are and how we've grown, because his talents are endless when it comes to, I can design something and make it look really cool, and then I design it and I give it to Eric, and it's like, how are we going to build this? And he'll sit down and scratch his head, and he'll be like, oh yeah, we can do this and we'll do this, and then he brings it to life. So it's been a lot of really good people.
Yeah. Well, and I know that, you know, Nature's Green in probably the last 5 to 7 years has really expanded to the pool business too, which,
well, and that came in the same thing I just spoke about. We were working with a couple different companies, pool companies, and then I would do the design work, set elevations, and do the complete design for the whole project, and then we would pull another company in to do the pool. And the two different companies that we used were perfectly fine, good companies. They just didn't prioritize our jobs because they weren't their jobs. And so it, you know, when the pool boom hit about 4 years ago, you know, they would be, well, you know, we can't get to that till next summer, and it's like this time of year this year.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's just not that's not gonna work.
That ain't gonna work.
So again, you know, we were very lucky to get the right people in house and start doing the pools, which again ties into all the other stuff we do with the patios. And then that led into pool houses and shelter houses, and we've done some really incredible pool houses with showers and changing rooms and kind of light, you know, light construction, really.
So Carly, did you realize as you took the classes that you took and that you'd be getting into a business that wasn't just putting plants in the ground?
No, not really. Because the pool boom was about 4 years ago, you said, and that's kind of when we did a lot more of that. But I've actually been going out on landscape crew and hardscape crew this last year, and that's something I never would have seen myself doing. But I really enjoy it, and it's a lot of fun.
So are you at the stage where you're starting to design some, or is that something that you work your way into?
She's perfectly good at design. She just doesn't have confidence at this point, which that will come with time.
Yeah.
I could do, like he said, I could do it, but right now I just take his designs and make them look pretty.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's ready to give up any control.
No, that's absolutely not true.
So, and I'll tell you what, it's, you know, your story, you know, from a family small business standpoint, is just prime port recovery stuff. You know, I mean, it is. You know, when you look at J&M started with a couple of brothers that got together, and you know, I mean, that's the way that we build tomorrow to a certain extent.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, yeah. I can't. I mean, I can't say enough about you know, Cy and helping and just being involved. I mean, you know, he was in the middle of the equipment company at the time, and you know, those guys were busy building and doing all the things, innovating and doing all the things they were doing with the poultry and stuff. And you know, again, he absolutely took time in the evenings and weekends to sit down and talk to a rum-dum like me, and it was, you know, again, I can't say enough. Just can't say enough.
That's fantastic and not the least bit surprising, is it? So let's talk. Okay, so we are fast approaching the 1st of April, okay? And we're in kind of go mode to a certain extent when it comes to things to do around your house for landscaping and lawn. So let's talk about what are some of the things that we should put at the top of our list to get done in the month of April.
You jumping in at all, or are you just going to let me do all this?
I'll just let you talk. You know more than I do.
There's just a lot of stuff to do this time of year. I mean, getting out there, I've seen some people out mowing already, you know, which is great. I mowed once. I know there's a number of people that's mowed two or three times. That absolutely nothing wrong with that. If the turf's growing, you know, mow it. Fertilization early season, you know, for your turf is great. If you're spending the time to put the fertilizer on, you probably want to consider, you know, putting a fertilizer with a pre-emergent on, because the pre-emergent crabgrass control is going to eliminate crabgrass and foxtail throughout the spring and summer. So that's, you know, something that you can hire done. There's tons of lawn care companies out there that will do those applications for you, or you can do them yourself. Granular applications are very easy to, inexpensive and easy if you have time. Inexpensive and easy.
So is it easy? You know, I know that the manual process is easy.
It's,
but as far as knowing what to put on it.
Well, if you go to a good, you know, local garden center, they're going to be able to help you and give you good advice. The biggest thing about your applications on your turf is, you know, how you have to know, you know, how big your lawn is. And in this day and age, you know, you can do that with an app on your phone.
Yeah.
You can find out how big your lot is, subtract your house, garage, and driveway out. That's the area you're treating. So in town, I mean, I could just guess, you know, your lot that you're treating at your house is probably 5,000 square feet-ish. And so a bag of pre-emergent fertilizer, and it says right on the bag, it'll cover 5,000 square feet, or it'll cover 10,000 square feet. So you get a 5,000 square foot bag and apply it to your lawn, you're good to go.
If you know how to run the applicator.
Yeah, but I mean,
I quit doing that.
Set the dial on.
Yeah, that's really easy. Right, except place. I killed my lawn about 25 years ago when I thought I had everything set, read the directions, did everything exactly right, and put it on there, and had within 2 weeks I had a nice brown lawn.
Killed it all.
Yeah. I don't know if I killed it, but I sure dormantized it. Dormantated.
So, you know, the granular applications are relatively easy unless you're Neil Spencer.
Yeah.
And then it's a little more complicated. So square footage and then applying the right amount certainly is very important for the turf. It's also very important for the environment, because you don't want to over-apply. Don't want to under-apply, you don't want to over-apply, but if you're going to miss an application, miss it on the bottom, then the over-application, because that's going to create runoff issues and potentially, you know, I guess you could call it pollution. Too much fertilizer, it's going to go somewhere, so you want to be careful. But fertilization, you know, this time of year is, hugely important to get the turf to perk up and green up and start growing and filling in. So there's, you know, lots of things to look at. With a few warm days, there's people, you know, already calling about, I got a dandelion blooming, you know, do I do the broadleaf application now? And it's like, just relax. Okay, yeah. Let's get some warm weather. Get your pre-emergent on first, and then let's talk to me about broadleaf maybe in May. Because
did call it Indian Spring, you know, so we had a week of pretty nice warm weather. So did that mess up the life cycle of the plants? Are they going to start blooming earlier than what they should?
Overall, as far as plant health, no, the plant health is fine. The magnolias are notorious for blooming early. The saucer magnolias, the royal stars, there's a lot of varieties that bloom really early. And the last couple years, we've had nice springs, and they've bloomed spectacular, and the duration of the bloom can be quite long. This year, not so much, because they blossomed or were opening early, and we had some 20 degree nights, and they showed pretty color. Depending on where you're at, they showed pretty color for a day or two, and then they just got frosted. So is that going to cause the plant to croak? No, absolutely not. But I mean, you just don't have any blooms for this year. So there's a lot of plants. So forsythias bloom early, the magnolias bloom early. Yeah, they took it on the chin, and they're not going to be very pretty this year. But I get a lot of people asking me about the bulbs, you know, the tulips, daffodils, crocuses, hyacinths, narcissus, whatever. Those things we haven't had any, you know, ridiculously cold nights that are going to cause them grief. 20 degrees is no problem.
It's fine.
Yeah, they're not going to be bothered in the least.
So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about our landscaping and shrubs and trees or whatever, and talk about what needs to be done with those. So we'll be back right after this.
Klingchern & Sons Trucking Incorporated is a family-owned and operated business in Burkittsville. They have over 50 years of experience, and they pride themselves on their commitment to punctual transportation and exceptional customer service. They offer local and long-haul transportation. They have dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers. They have great employment opportunities as well. Visit their website at klingchernandsons.com or call them at 937-338-5000. Call Klingchern & Sons Trucking for all your transportation needs.
Since 1989, Case IH Maxim Series tractors have earned a reputation for longevity, reliability, and productivity. Find out how the latest generation of Maxim can raise your productivity at Hull Brothers in Fort Recovery. Start with the Active Drive 8 dual-clutch transmission, delivering a wider range of working speeds without torque interruptions or manual gear changes. And with models ranging from 116 to 145 horsepower plus a two-wheel drive option, there's a Case IH Maxim Series tractor to meet your needs. To learn more, visit Hull Brothers in Fort Recovery today.
If you're looking for great food at great prices, just call Miracle Lanes at 375-4274. They have sandwiches, fried goodies, subs, salads, wraps, and of course their famous pizza and wings. Everybody can get what they want. Just call them and drive through and pick it up. And be sure to stop in on Fridays at lunch for their famous pizza and wing buffet. Make Miracle Lanes your number one spot for great food. Be sure to put their number in your phone and just call them whenever you're hungry. 419-375-4274. The Fort Recovery Firefighters Association will be serving their annual barbecue chicken dinners on Sunday, April 7th at the Fire Hall. That's right, they'll be serving those great barbecue chicken dinners that we all love. The tickets are only $10 each and are pre-sale only and available from any of the firefighters. And be sure to grab a couple of extra dinners for a quick meal during the week. Get your tickets now, then stop down on Sunday afternoon, April 7th from 4 to 6 p.m. and pick up your chicken dinners. Get your tickets now from any of our firefighters for the Fort Recovery Firefighters Chicken Dinners, Sunday, April 7th from 4 to 6 p.m.
We're back. Insight. Talking to Steve Stone and Carly Greaseup from Nature's Green, celebrating 30 years in business in Port Recovery. So, Steve, we've been talking about things to do in the spring. So let's talk about shrubs and landscaping. Things are starting to get buds. What's the best thing to do with the various things that you've got?
The time of year that it is now, and it's early because it's still March, but we talked off air about the, I don't know what you want to call it, the Indian spring that we had, where we had a week of, you know, ridiculously warm temperatures for the time of year that it was. And that kind of jump started spring. It got the plants all fired up and they're, you know, breaking bud, breaking dormancy and going like bananas. So at this point, it's pretty obvious on almost, I would say, if not all of your landscape plants, nearly all of your landscape plants either have little tiny leaves starting to emerge, or it's pretty obvious. I mean, I want to say it's obvious, but I'm assuming that Neil could probably screw it up.
I could. Do you need another employee?
It's pretty obvious at this point. Spireas, your hydrangeas and roses, those are really, if you look closely, obvious what's alive tissue and what's dead tissue. It's very easy on roses and hydrangeas because the tissue that's alive is just bright green can be. Yeah. And the tissue that's dead is chocolate brown. And so it's easy to go in and selectively with your pruners, you know, prune the dead out. And you can do that with your spireas. I looked at I was on a job today and looked at a whole bunch of spireas. And, you know, for as mild as the winter was, we had really cold temperatures like right around Christmas, like right before Christmas. But other than that, you know, January and February were about as mild as I can remember in a long time. And so winter injuries, not bad. But these spireas had a lot of dead in them. And I said, you know, she said, what do I do? I said, just trim them back by about half because there was a lot of dead tissue. And I said, they'll fill in very quickly. So pruning and trimming, you know, checking what's alive and what's dead, doing some selective pruning, cleaning the roses, the hydrangeas, you know, as things are starting, the lilacs are starting to actually show real nice color with the buds, you know, just take the dead wood out. Also on the hydrangeas, even if they haven't died back and the stems and branches are green, it's a good idea this time of year to deadhead them, which, you know, most different varieties of hydrangeas, the flowers don't shatter at the end of the season. They hold on, and so you've got these big balls of blooms that are still on there. Those just need to be removed, so you just kind of lightly prune those and deadhead those, take those off, and that's all you really need to do. As long as there's no other dead branches or tissue in there, just turn them loose and they'll be perfectly fine. But roses and hydrangeas too, if they're a lot bigger than you want them to be, like if you have some knockout roses and if they're happy and healthy, they grow like mad. And so if you want to take them back by a third or a half, this is the time of year to do it. And
what about it? What about pruning them in the fall? Terrible, not so bad, just better in the spring?
On roses?
Yeah.
I'd always tell people that if you've had success doing what you're doing, I'm not going to argue with you. But again, back to Ohio State, when we were there, we had a rose plot, and it was huge. And we did research on roses. All the rose growers would send us their roses, and we would evaluate them for 3 years. And blooms, how they bloomed, fragrancy, petal count, susceptibility to disease and insects, those were all things we monitored. And we always did the pruning in the spring. We always pruned them back in the spring. We mulched them heavy in the fall and then didn't prune them back till spring. So I would recommend, and again, it makes perfect sense too, because if you have a mild winter, you may not get a lot of dieback. Mm. And so if you're guessing in the fall and you trim it back really far, you may not have had to trim them back that far if we have a mild winter. So you wait till spring, you make a lot better decision on when and how to prune or how far down you need to go. So Again, a lot of different, you know, if you've got evergreens like boxwoods and taxus and junipers, you can certainly nip them back right now if they're a little wild and woolly from last season. This is a fine time of year to do that. So
I guess really any time is a good time to get rid of the deadwood.
Yeah, this time of year is a great time of year again to deadwood and clean. And I guess I should add this other. I mean, if you're talking about again lilacs, you're talking about forsythia, serviceberry, redbuds, and crab apples, you don't want to prune them at all right now because they're getting ready to bloom. Okay. So if you trim your lilac looks woolly from last year, it's like, I'm going to go and clean that up and give it a quick haircut. Well, you just trimmed off all the blooms for now, for spring. It's not going to kill the plant. It just, you've eliminated all the flowers. So wait on all your spring flowering plants, which again, everything I just mentioned, wait until after they're done flowering. Like your crab apples, get a lot of people ask when to prune crab apples. Immediately after they're done blooming is the best time to prune them. Because the later, if you wait until, I mean, anytime really after probably July 4th, on your spring flowering plants, if you start pruning after July 4th and then you prune into the late summer and into the fall, those plants have already set bud for spring. And so you're going to slowly, quickly, I guess, eliminate flowers for the following season, depending on how late you prune in the season. And again, if you prune a lilac really late in the fall, your flowering for the following season is going to be little or no blooms because they've already set bloom for the following year.
Huh, I'll be damned. You know that, Neil?
I'm going to say yes, but it would be a lie.
Okay.
But I want to look smart, so I'm going to say yes, I knew that.
So as far as planting new, is this?
Good time of year to plant. Great time of year to plant any hardy, woody, flowering shrubs, trees, evergreens, stuff like that. You want to be a little careful on... Well, certainly annuals you don't want to plant. Our annuals look fantastic because Carly's taking care of the greenhouses now. And they do look spectacular. Some of the varieties and colors we've got are just, like, incredible.
But wait till May on those.
Yeah, but you got to wait till frost-free date.
After Mother's Day?
Frost-free date for this part of Ohio is supposed to be May 15th. I mean... Yeah. Depending on what the forecast looks like, you know, we'll have people wanting to plan or getting excited about planting in late April, which as long as you look at the extended forecast and it looks mild, have at it. Because I can't wait till halfway through May.
And our open house is the first weekend in May. And stuff will be ready. And that's normally when we see people coming in to get stuff. Occasionally, I think we've had people have to move stuff inside for just that week. But then normally after May 15th, that's normally pretty true. Pretty accurate.
So what's the most popular things that you sell out there from an annual? Okay, first of all, explain to me the annual biannual thing.
Perennial is probably the other. Is there very much biennial?
There's not a lot of biennials. Foxglove is a biennial. And there's a few perennials that are biennials. But basically, we're mostly talking about annuals versus perennials.
Okay.
It's very easy. Very easy for you here. Remember this. Very, very easy. Ohio State is a perennial powerhouse in football.
Oh.
Every year.
Every year.
They're awesome.
Comes back every year.
They're awesome every year. They come back every year better than the year before. They're a perennial powerhouse. Perennials come back year after year after year. Annuals are just... Annuals you would consider to be like, I don't know, maybe like a Michigan. Like annual, like 1 year last
they
year.
They might be good this
they
year.
They were good last year.
No, they're saying that they are going to rule college football for the next 10 decades.
Yeah, Neil, and monkeys are going to fly out of my butthole later.
So don't get him started.
I have another question about that, but Neil keeps snapping his hand like we have to go to break.
We're going to break it.
Yeah, so I think we're
going to break. So just throw a teaser.
And I'm going to come back and learn more about what the hell an annual and a perennial is.
There you go.
We got don't know. We'll be back.
He just told you.
There's one guarantee in business, and that is that you can never predict the future. Hi, I'm Amanda Segrist with Fort Recovery Insurance. Lots of unpredictable things happen in business. The economy might take a U-turn, or that guy from down the road might take a U-turn into your front door. From a commercial insurance package to a commercial umbrella policy, we can make sure you are covered for the unpredictable. We are your local agent for Ohio Mutual Insurance Group. Visit us at www.fortrecoveryinsurance.com.
You can't predict the future. Well, except that Ohio weather is unpredictable, and sometime in the future, you will lose power. Of course, with the Generac automatic standby generator from Reasoner Energy, you're covered. And for added predictability, now through October 8th, get a free 10-year warranty with your purchase of a Generac automatic standby generator. That's a $1,035 value. Terms and conditions apply. A predictable future is in your hands. Call for details, Reasoner Energy, 419-678-4858.
Be sure to stop into Wayne IGA and check out their new items in their grab-and-go cooler. They have a nice variety of fresh store-made salads and desserts, and now they also have some great ready-to-heat-and-eat meals like ravioli, meatloaf, chicken alfredo, beef brisket, and lots more. They also have containers of their store-made cooked beef, pork, and cream chicken. Check it out the next time you're up there and stock up on your favorites. There's a different variety of grab-and-go meals every day. Grab and go at Wayne IGA, your best friend on a busy night. The baseball season is underway, and Fort Recovery Radio will bring you every game this season. The Indians have one more game this week as they travel to Crestview this Saturday for a game at noon. Our pregame show will start around 11:50. Get your gang together and head up to Convoy on Saturday to help cheer on our Indians. And a reminder that State Route 49 is closed in the village of Rim. We hope to see you at the game on Saturday, but if you just can't get to the game in person, you can always listen live right here on Fort Recovery Radio, the home of the Indians.
We're back. Insight. And I finally asked enough questions about perennials and annuals that neither Steve nor Carly are talking to me anymore.
So,
well, perennials come back year after year, and there's tons and tons of neat varieties for us that are winter hardy.
And the annuals are the things that the women will come out and they'll get them and they'll put them in their various pots,
yeah. Pots, containers, window boxes. And they, you know, petunias and patience, marigolds,
planters out in front of the
radio station.
Radio studio. Mm-hmm.
The purple petunias and geraniums, which have always been a super popular annual plant. Geraniums are, you know, been around forever. You know, people love them,
and I think Carly said that the perennials tend to be the low to the ground.
They're various sizes, but they're like a landscape plant, but they're just smaller. They're not woody. Okay. They're more fleshy.
Yeah, they don't have a woody stem like a spirea or boxwood or something like that. They're not ground cover. There's ground cover varieties, but like coneflowers, there are certain varieties of coneflower that can get 36 to 48 inches tall. The old hollyhocks that everybody used to use. Hollyhocks can get 6 or 7 foot over a summer. Bee balm can get quite tall, and they'll bloom, you know, like hollyhocks are mid to late summer fall flowering. Again, a lot of different seasons of bloom, spring, summer, fall flowering, but those will all die down to the ground in the wintertime, and then they come right back up again in the spring. Like an ornamental grass, ornamental grasses are hugely popular, and those blades, you know, turn brown and die off in the wintertime. You kind of cut them down right to the ground, and then in the spring, they come right back up again.
I was going to say, those are a good thing to trim back in the fall. Talking about trimming different things.
Yeah, the ornamental grasses,
the flowering perennials.
Perennials, yeah.
Grasses you can leave up.
Yeah, the perennials, most of them you want to trim down before winter sets in. You don't have to, but I think for the health of the plant, it's a good idea to trim those down, like, again, your coneflower, black-eyed Susan.
So when you say to trim them down...
all the way to the ground.
So is that to trim down low and then to cover them up?
Well,
with mulch or whatever?
If they're brand new, like if you just planted them, it's not a bad idea to give them that blanket for the winter time. But again, you know, there's tons of different varieties of coneflower. Black-eyed Susan, which is Rudbeckia is the botanical name. Echinacea, which is a coneflower. The daylilies, the hostas, you know, those, all the varieties I just mentioned are, I mean, I would say bulletproof. I mean, it really would take a hard winter to kill them. The only way you're going to kill them is like a ridiculous amount of foot traffic or a flood.
Yeah.
They don't like wet feet, and if you stomp all over them all winter long, they may not come back. But other than that, it's really hard to get rid of them. Iris, there's tons of different varieties of iris that are, you know, beautiful spring, summer flowering. So there's just so many different perennials. And I really want to push perennials too, because we've got such a issue with the lack of pollinators, specifically bees, and all the coneflower, all the perennials I've mentioned are great for your landscaping because they invite in very important insects like butterflies and honeybees. So it's always a good idea to have something that's going to attract those.
So do you recommend, like, if like you're putting things around a deck area or like a high traffic people are going to sit around, that you don't put something there that attracts bees and you put those in the front of the house?
It depends on you. I mean, yeah. I certainly my backyard is all perennials. I mean, it's just no rhyme nor reason a lot of times, which drives Nikki crazy. If it self-seeds, which black-eyed Susan's notorious for self-seeding, coneflower's notorious for self-seeding, she has a thing where she's like, get rid of that. And it's like, let's just see what it does. And so again, you know, honeybees are really important for our environment, and they aren't going to bother you in the least. If you don't go up and try to whack them with your hat or something, they are not aggressive. And so it's, you know, and again, butterflies, like
don't leave your Mountain Dew can open.
No, yes. No. Those are the wrong bees. The honeybees don't drink pop, beer, and
they don't like that sugar?
No. They're after flowers.
Oh.
They're specifically after flowers.
Oh, never mind.
You got the wrong bee. You get the wrong turn. Somebody turn his mic off.
I didn't know. I thought there's bumblebees and honeybees.
No, you're way off. But we don't have enough time to get into entomology. But if you'd like to get into entomology, I can educate.
Well,
you would have to bring an entire chart and some live and some dead, and it would be a 3 or 4 week seminar for me to understand that there's bumblebees, honeybees, and other stuff.
I think I got the skills to even teach you, big guy.
I'd be surprised.
But again, you're attracting hummingbirds too. Those coneflowers. Another thing that's cool about the coneflowers, if you don't trim them down like in the late summer, coneflowers have the big center cushion in the middle. They actually
spell coneflower. I mean, what is that?
Echinacea. Does that help? That's the botanical name. Coneflower is a very common perennial.
You probably see them everywhere. The big, tall, probably you've seen the purple ones. Big, tall, purple flower.
They have a big daisy flower, but what I was getting at was the flowers bloom and then they produce seed. And so I keep mine up all through the fall because the finches will come in, the yellow finches will come in and hang on them and pull the seeds out of them. And so again, it's just, and we have a big bed of milkweed in the backyard too, which I have people say, what in the heck is that? And it's like, well, it's milkweed. And that is what, there you go. Look at Neil. He is on top of things.
That's Googleizing.
There you go. That's a purple cone flower, but there's a million different varieties and colors and heights and sizes. But yeah, that's
the... And those are perennials.
Those are perennials.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And those attract, again, hummingbirds, and they'll attract all kinds of pollinators, but mostly bees.
So this question's for Carly. Okay, so I've got a... In my backyard, I've got about a 30-foot by 6-foot patch back there. And I'm trying to talk my wife into making it more flowers than... Okay, what would you recommend I start with back there? With the understanding that my wife kills everything.
Like perennials, you're saying? That's what you want?
Is that the bed that's back along the alley? Or closest to the alley?
From a perennial standpoint, what should I put back there?
It's a lot of sun, mostly. I mean, it's a lot of sun. First thing you have to do is when you say that is you have to, if any landscaper or nursery person's worth their salt, they're going to ask you what the exposure is, which means
it's high sun,
sunshade, north, south, east, west, in town, out of town, all those things make a difference on what you recommend. Okay, go ahead, Carly.
I'm going to say a bunch of different colors of coneflower because they're easy, like you said, they'll self-pollinate. Hard to kill them.
Yep.
Shasta daisies, those are my favorite. That's why I would plant them. They look exactly like the coneflower, just with a white head.
And they're fairly hardy.
Yes,
too.
Yes, they'll come back. Sedum. I got help from the crowd over here.
Sedum.
What would you say they're like? They're more like a...
When you say sedum, people don't understand sedum, or don't recognize the name, but live forever is what, like, old people call it. It's been around forever. They call it live forever because it never dies.
Huh?
But there's a lot of really cool varieties of sedum that, again, will attract a lot of butterflies. The blooms are very...
Tall flowers, kind of daisy-looking flowers, like cone flowers?
They're
or what?
Very different. You're going to need a visual for this one.
Google that up, big guy.
With S-E-D-U-M?
With the cone flowers.
S-E-D-U-M.
Are those
E-D-U-M.
Going to...
I think that's what I said.
Flower... Just in the spring, or is it going to flower pretty much?
Those are pretty much all season long.
Well, that's the thing. When your back bed would be perfect to create a perennial garden. You could call it a cut flower garden. You could call it because like the Shasta daisies and the cone flowers and stuff are things that you could easily cut and bring inside that might last a few days indoors. But again, that would be like a pollinator garden too. There's Coreopsis. We've neglected to mention Coreopsis. That's another great perennial flower. But when you do a perennial garden, you want to know your plants well enough to have spring, summer, and fall flowering perennials. So spring flowering, you know, would be like a Lenten rose. Those things can bloom as early as February. I had mine bloom in February once, not this last year, but so again, you kind of use different perennials and they come and go for seasons of bloom from spring, summer to late fall.
But the cone flowers kind of, they last a while.
Oh yeah, the cone flowers are going to start probably late May, early June, and they're going to bloom heavily through. They're awesome because they bloom really heavy through the heat of the summer. So like July, late June, July, and August, when things can get kind of hot and dry, those things are just happy as can be. And black-eyed Susan's the same way.
Okay, this is off of the current subject. Do people tend, when they plant something, to overwater or underwater?
Underwater.
I would say underwater would be, very common is underwatering because people don't understand how quickly new plants can dry out. They could dry out in a day if it's brand new and you plant it in.
Well, especially when we're doing landscape jobs in July in the heat of the summer. And they're like, why are my plants dying? Well, did you water them recently? And the answer is normally no.
Yeah.
Well, the best answers is like, yeah, I just watered it yesterday. And
it's crispy.
And there's a crack in the ground big enough I could stick my hand in. And I'm like, yeah, that was watered yesterday. So, underwatering is certainly, you know, again, once they, and it's not something that, like, with perennials or woody plants or anything, it's not something that you have to water. It's not like it's an all-year-long process. Yeah. If you give them a chance and you water them the first couple of weeks, you know, pretty religiously, then they're starting to get established, and then you can start being lazier and lazier and lazier because they're already kind of getting their roots underneath them. Yeah. So the first 2 weeks are pretty critical, and then after that, it'll root in. All the plants we're talking about will root in relatively fast, and so then your requirements for watering is going to decline quickly.
My next question. So as I drive around town, it seemed like the Japanese, let's see, is it Japanese pear? Is that what
there's a lot of? The calorie pear. Yeah.
Cleveland pear.
That those took a hit last year, or that it seems like I've seen a lot of them that have the discolored bark. They don't look as healthy as they normally do.
There's a couple different things. Well, first of all, the calorie pears are now in Ohio, Indiana, I'm pretty sure Kentucky. They're an invasive species, or they've been moved to an invasive species category, so you shouldn't plant, buy, or
You can't get them anywhere.
You can't plant, buy, or propagate them because they're a weed. You mess with Mother Nature and you don't know what you're going to end up with. You know, they said they were sterile. They're not. The fruit's sterile. They're not. The birds eat them and drop droppings everywhere, and then they germinate and grow, and then they crowd out all the native varieties of plants that should be in those areas. It just crowds them out. But they have had issues in the last couple years. Fire blight has been a disease that has gotten into pears, then causes tip dieback and just thin foliage and tip dieback. And so you see the ends of the branches, you know, start to die down between 4 inches to 18 inches and turned completely brown, and the ends of the branches, shepherd's hook, they curl over, and that's fire blight. So fire blight's been an issue, and there's been powdery mildew getting on the foliage. There's just a number of different diseases that's been attacking them. It hasn't been an insect issue. It's been disease issues. But again, they're a horrible tree, and we sold them like crazy when we started the business. But yeah. They turned out to be an absolutely horrible tree for the environment, for your landscaping. They're just not. They're very short lived too. They have a horrible branch.
They smell terrible too.
Flowers smell terrible, and they have a terrible branching habit. And wind, ice, and snow causes them to break. And they usually will last, you know, if you're lucky, 15 years in your landscape, and then a big wind comes and knocks a branch out, half the tree's gone, and it looks stupid, and you cut it down. And, you know, if you plant a tree, it should live 100 years.
Huh. I'll be damned.
Yep. How about we take a break and wrap up, because we have a sports talk with Hal McCoy that I just found out about.
Well,
and baseball coach. And Bob usually tries to have him on around 8:15.
Oh, hell.
I think. No, I don't know that.
Tell you what, Hal can just wait on me.
You tell him that.
Yeah. So we'll be back right after this.
Boars Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Boars, or Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Boars Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Boars Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
Joel Appliance and Electronics is the place to find GE appliances, parts, and service, Radio Shack electronics, scrapbooking supplies, and even kitchenette brooms. Shop Strolls at 1513 North Meridian Street in Portland, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. until 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. until noon. Need an appointment? Call me, Debbie, at Strolls, 260-726-7136.
Hi, this is Chad Guggenbiller with CSG Consulting and Finance and Brokerage in Fort Recovery. I believe firmly in two things. The little things mean a lot, and to be great, you have to be practicing certain tasks, OADB, on a daily basis. That's why farmers, when thinking about your 2023 and 2024 operating monies, come see me for the best value in the market, because operating costs affect you every day, and it's nice having a friend helping you navigate those current market challenges. See me for a free review. CSG Consulting, your partner in planning and the fundamental things. 419-852-4049.
The Fort Recovery High School baseball team is having a barbecue chicken dinner on Saturday, April 20th, and you can pick up the dinners from 11 to 1 at the new baseball facility. There will also be a baseball game with the Lincoln View Lancers that day, starting at 11 a.m. So bring the family out to the game that day and enjoy the barbecue chicken and the baseball game. The tickets for the chicken dinners are just $10 each, and you get a half a chicken from Wendell's Barbecue, plus applesauce, chips, and a roll. If you're not going to the game, you can just drive through and pick them up. You can contact any of the high school baseball players for tickets, and you can also get them by contacting Wendell's Barbecue at 375-4074. Don't miss out on the baseball team's barbecue chicken dinners this year, available on Saturday, April 20th from 11 to 1 during our home baseball game with Lincoln View.
We're back. Insight, talking to Carly and Steve about all things plant. And this, again, this has been a quick hour.
Absolutely.
You know, and...
We need to be on as frequently as sports talk.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
We could move stuff around if you want to have them back next week, Jack.
Well, I'm out next week, but I'll talk to you about that.
Oh, okay.
Later. So let's... touch on, so is there anything that we didn't touch on that you guys wanted to bring up?
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of stuff. Hal's going to have to wait at least half hour.
You tell him.
There's tons of, I mean, this time of year, there's just a lot of stuff to talk about. We didn't talk about pruning fruit trees. You got to get your fruit trees pruned. Got to get your horticultural oil on.
Got to roll your lawns. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
I've gotten soft in my old age. If you want to do it, have at it.
Have at it. I know it.
Then in the summertime when you have no grass and it's all bare dirt, I
don't come crying to me.
I'll say I've warned you, but
so and I'll ask Carly, since you're the newbie here, what's the next big thing?
I don't know. What do you think?
The next big thing is what I've noticed is people don't want to mulch anymore. Is selling decorative stone instead of mulch.
Really?
Yeah. We've got all different suppliers for different color, brown, black, white, different
stone?
Colors of yeah, aggregate. We call it aggregate, stone, whatever, and people are putting weed fabric down, and well, you better be putting weed fabric down and then putting the decorative stone down instead of mulch.
And I guess incorporating the two, we've seen a lot of that where you have some stone and some mulch in areas, you kind of create different patterns with it.
It's really, yeah, kind of a, if you travel a lot, I mean, it's kind of that southwest kind of a feel,
yeah,
where you have the stone, and it, I don't know. I'm not a fan. I wouldn't do it because I plant and garden, and you know, having fabric and stone down, you know, it's nearly impossible to plant what I want to plant. So I would never use it. But from a maintenance standpoint, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. From a commercial standpoint, you know, the restaurants and stores and all that stuff, it makes perfect sense because they can really eliminate money, material, yeah, time, labor, dollars.
How often should you mulch?
You can get by with mulching you can get by. I mean, I mulch every year, but I put a really thin layer down, because if you put a thick layer down and you get 4, 5, 6 inches over, because you're doing it every season, that's too much. I mean, there's a law of diminishing returns there, where if you're 6 inches thick, it's actually not healthy for the plants. It's a detriment, but a 2 to 3 inches is perfect. The plants are happy as can be. So you just got to be careful what you apply and how much you apply.
Fall or spring?
I would recommend in the fall, but, I mean, everybody wants to do it in the spring.
Because it looked pretty.
Another thing that I think is going to get to be more and more and more popular from, and I'm not a fan, but synthetic turf is gaining popularity. It's not super popular around here yet, but in larger cities and like Colorado, I got a buddy that I went to school with that works in Colorado, and all those second homes that people have in the mountains and all over Colorado, he does a ton of synthetic turf. So it doesn't, it's not the old AstroTurf days. It's not the ugly crap. It looks, I mean, at a golf cart pace driving by, you may not even notice the difference. It's that real looking, but you eliminate your, I mean, from a commercial standpoint as well, you eliminate fertilizer. So you're not putting fertilizer down. You're not mowing. You're not putting insecticide, pesticides.
Probably from an environmental
standpoint. It's gaining popularity. It's not around here as much, but I think you're going to see more of it because, again, you're going to be eliminating water. You're not putting an irrigation system in that can be quite expensive, and you're not putting water on it every day. And again, you're eliminating pesticides, fertilizers. You're eliminating all that stuff.
And mud around here. A lot of people with their dogs. You.
Yes.
I've seen it at a couple houses where they have animals, and they mostly have it just for them. So they have a spot to go, and it's not so muddy.
Yeah. Yeah, an area like that for pets is perfect. And we're getting more and more calls in regards to that. So that's something that may be up and coming.
How do you mow your grass? Where do you put your blade? Three?
This time of year, I'd be 2.5. And then once we get through, like, Memorial Day and we start getting a lot warmer, I'd mow at 3, 3.5.
Yeah. He also mows every other day.
The higher the when it gets hot, higher's better. I mean, scalping is miserable. It's just horrible for your lawn. I mean, it's horrible, and it stands to reason the taller your grass is, if it's 3 inches, and we get a 0.2 inch of rain, and you've got tall blades of grass, the sun can't hit it and evaporate it as fast, and so the moisture stays there longer. If it's mowed at 1.5 inches, I mean, it just turns to dust immediately. So, bump them up when it gets hot.
So a good crop of corn, Jim Stahman has corn, and his seed corn, and he always puts his signs out. How come you don't do that?
we put signs out for landscape jobs we do.
When you did a new one, but like, let's say you come to my house and you, like late last year, you put my flower bed. Is that an advertisement thing? Wouldn't it be?
I hound my guys incessantly about putting signs up, and they never listen to me. They're like my kids.
Yeah, well,
they do not listen. I can just talk and nobody listens.
Is there anybody listening right now, Neil?
Huh? There you go.
Neil, I'll tell you what. I know that we're on a tight schedule.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a date when we can have you guys back relatively soon and touch on the things that we weren't able to cover.
Yeah, get it figured out, and I can move whoever else I have penciled in. They are penciled in, not written in ink, so we can move around. Pick a time, and we'll be good.
Do you have Don Kemper penciled in? Because I would love to.
That would be sports talk.
I would love to bump Don Kemper.
That would be sports talk.
I would love to say that I bumped Don Kemper.
So, well, I tell you what, Stephen Garlick, thank you tremendously. Congratulations on 30 years. That's something to be really proud of.
I feel old.
Yeah, well, we are.
Thanks, Neil.
Of course, it was 40 years ago when I was your age, but still.
Who invited him up here anyhow?
What? I have a key.
So, Jack, I'll come back anytime you want, anytime, any. It's just as long as Neil's not here.
Oh, wow.
We'll arrange that. So for Jack Stogler, Stephen Carlin.
Well, we need to get to Rocker, don't we? Are we going to knock him out of here?
Well, I don't have time.
Huh? Okay.
We have time for Rocker?
Yeah.
All right. Jump in here, Rocker. Get in here, buddy.
Rocker, come here, big guy.
Yep. So, jump in and...
I promise not to interrupt you 100 times.
I will.
What did you just drop?
We are in a time crunch, our Scooter.
Hey, Rock.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks,
Carly.
Jack, I'm going to make this quick. On this day in pop culture, 1975, The Young and the Restless premieres on CBS for the first time.
What day?
1975.
Boy, we watched a lot of episodes of that baby.
And Victor Newman's still on there.
Yep.
40 years later.
So Nikki.
Yes. 1982, Ebony and Ivory hits the airwaves. Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder.
And I believe.
We got 4 minutes. Are we calling how or he calling us?
You just keep going. Yeah. We
should
get
this song. Okay, for today's 1939, this is some you boys be interested in.
Yep.
The very first March Madness opened in, I don't know what state it was, but the eventual winner was Oregon beating out Ohio State.
Ooh! Really?
1939.
Get that right.
So when you're saying March Madness, are you talking about it? In 1939, that would have been the NIT would be the national championship.
I'm just going with that. They give me.
You have to do a little bit of homework. Delve into it a little bit.
I got 4 minutes to do this dog and pony show. 1992, White Men Can't Jump swooshed into the theaters.
Scott Harris.
Swished into the theaters.
Like that one, did you?
That was kind of weak.
Good feet.
Weak.
Well, in that case, it was good.
Weak.
Weak.
I'll give you weak.
Who's okay.
Wesley Snipes.
Scott Harrison. Hamilton.
Scott Hamilton. He was a skater.
Yes, not even closer. Scooter. Area birthdays.
Oh.
Tuesday, Alan.
Happy birthday
to Alan Wendell.
Alan Wendell.
Alan Wendell. Happy birthday out.
Today we got Julie Krieg and Jessica Niekamp.
Yes.
All right. Two awesome folks.
Friday we got Paul Bonvillain Jr. and Jana Mullenkamp.
Paul Bonvillain Jr. I wanna. So is Paul gonna be like what? 65?
Somewhere in that ballpark, I would say.
Close.
Billy's AJ.
Yeah.
Our citizen of the day, Charlie Keller.
All right.
Charlie Keller. Good,
good choice.
I got some birthdays.
Oh, yeah?
Birthday up.
I don't have any today.
I'm waiting, Bubba. Clocks are ticking. And Hal just disappeared.
Lisa Butt Muller.
Yeah. Okay.
Lisa Butt Muller.
All right.
Lumberyard.
Yep.
I was waiting for him to get finished. I didn't want to interrupt the big guy.
No, I mean you have to say her name.
Well, he did.
But he wasn't really on mic.
Oh, I can't help that.
Okay, go ahead.
I got one gimmick.
You're crabby today. Are you grumpy?
Celebrity birthday time.
All right.
Ooh, I love celebrity birthday.
I hope it's Al McCoy's birthday.
Yesterday we got. And we start out with the Crypt Keeper herself.
Ooh.
Nancy Pelosi turns 84.
Jeez. That was rude.
But But you liked it.
It was funny. I didn't say. No. Well, she spoke highly of you.
I hope not. Bob Woodward turns 81.
Mm. Wow.
Then Diana Ross turns a crisp 80.
Ooh. Yep. Diana Ross.
Diana Ross.
She used to be with the Supremes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Baby Love.
Very good.
Ain't no mountain.
Jack had a little jungle fever for that, probably back in the day. No?
Nah. Her eyelashes were too big.
She scared me.
Yeah. She scared me.
Okay. Vicki Lawrence turned 75. We got quite a few of these, so I'm going to make this quick.
No, Vicki Lawrence is good. What song she got? Boots are made.
That's a night.
No, that was Nancy Sinatra.
Yeah. Very good.
She was on the Carol Burnett show.
Mama.
That's the night that they saw the innocent man.
Martin Short turns 74.
I hate him.
Huh? Martin Short?
Martin Short. This would be
Martin luck. Short? I was thinking she was.
She's dead, you morons. Jennifer Grey turns 64.
Flashdance.
That was.
Yeah, it's very good.
Oh,
that's Jennifer Beals. That's Jennifer Beals, by the way. But you got the right spirit.
And what else?
Kenny Chesney's 56.
Hey, me and Harold drank beer. I didn't. With his dad or grandpa.
Yeah.
Who's?
Kenny Chesney.
Townsend.
That's where he's from. Townsend, Tennessee.
Really?
Yeah, we were at the golf course and his grandpa was in there. Yeah.
Cool.
He said, boy, that's a 34.6 degree beer. That's the perfect temperature.
That's how cold you want it. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
After T.R. Knight is 49.
Well.
And Keira Knightley is 39.
Mmm.
Today's birthday is...
Is it an eclipse?
Quentin Tarantino is 61. Mariah Carey, Carrero, is 54. And Fergie is 49.
Fergie. Who's the last one?
Fergie.
So Fergie, the singer?
Singer, and
not,
yes.
Not what's her name that was in the royal family? No, married
not that Fergie. Not that Fergie.
Those things.
Those are macadamia nuts.
And now back to the important part of the show. Al McCoy, if he's still with us.
So, thank you, Rocker. And another award-winning show. Fellas.
Yes.
Get no better.
It's yep.
It's on a roll.
Yeah, that, unfortunately, it does not get any better.
No.
On a roll.
Neil?
Yep.
I'm out next week.
Where you at?
Yeah, we'll come. We'll go there and we'll do it remote.
Remote?
I'm on vacation.
Yeah, we'll go remote.
Again?
We going to Florida?
Biloxi.
Biloxi.
Mississippi.
Michigan.
There's nope. Oh, Biloxi, Michigan?
Nope.
Biloxi, Texas.
New Hampshire. Oklahoma.
Yep. Biloxi, New
Biloxi,
Hampshire.
Oklahoma.
I don't think so. We'll come out there and we'll do the show from there.
That works for me. Stay tuned for Sports Talk with Hal McCoy. I think the baseball coach.
Yep.
We have, yes. I think the football coach.
Got them all.
And Fort Recovery's lacrosse team's
yes.
new coach.
Yep.
Undefeated right now.
Who just signed a 5-year contract.
Yep.
He's undefeated.
So,
$6,000 a week.
Thank you for staying tuned to It Right with Mr. Jack Stogler right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show was being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show. Thank you.